Hello and welcome to episode 56 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And this week we bring you our conversation with Supriya Joshi, a stand-up comedian and writer who's worked extensively with All India Bakhjodh.
Supriya enlightened us on what it means to be at the forefront of both the feminist movement as well as the change that is happening in the comedy circles in India. And as you can imagine, we shared a lot of giggles along the way. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Welcome to the show, Supriya. You're the first female comedian to come on our show, and we're bursting with questions to ask you, so we hope you have some time on your hands.
I have a lot of time today, and I'm so happy. I'm so happy to be here talking to you guys today.
Well, Supriya, the first time I saw or even heard of you and your work was in the Kangana Ranaut video, the one that was done by AIB. And honestly, I still watch it and I still crack up because I just find it hilarious. And I think I've watched it about 20 times now. But I think what really struck me was that AIB have such amazing opportunities for writers like you. So how did you get into comedy writing and how did you get involved with it, with AIB, and how did you come into the scene?
So I throughout my career, I've always been a writer in some capacity. So before AIB, I was a features writer in a magazine, and I had been there for like 5 years. And towards the end of it, I was getting really bored, you know, and I just started to think that there has to be something more I can do. This can't be the trajectory where my life is going. And then, you know, this app came out, Vine, and I was seeing all the American creators make all these videos like 7 seconds long, and they're just so funny. And I was like, you know, why not just give it a shot myself? So I started making Vine videos, and they were all, and I started doing those, and then I got my sister involved in this, them as well, which is when people really started to notice that I do have a comedic voice, and which might just be lacking in the scene. So in 2016, towards the end of 2016, Tanmay Bhatt, who is one of the co-founders of AIB, he got in touch with me through Twitter. And then he told me that he really liked my vines, and if I would like to give a copy test to become a writer at AIB. I was like, is that even a question you need to ask? Of course, I would love to do that. And then what happened was he sent me the copy test. And within like 2 days of that, I had started, you know, really fitnessing at that time. Within like 2-3 days of that, I was running, okay, and I was training. I was like, I have to run a marathon this year, you know, like I have to do this. And second day, I get the worst hamstring injury you can imagine in your life. Like, I was unable to move for like almost a month and a half. And in that condition, there was no way I can think of a joke. Like, my life is a joke right now. How am I going to think of a joke? So I was like, I couldn't do it. And then around, then he, while later he messaged me, I said, what happened? You were supposed to send me the test. I'm like, I'm so sorry this has happened to me. But he was very sweet. He said, you know, take your time, no rush or anything. And then I did it. And then I met the guys for an interview and they gave me the job. And when I was like, wow, like unbelievable things are now going to happen to my life. And honestly, it's been like that since that day, since I joined AIB. I have had a chance to write things that are meaningful not only to me, but to a lot of people who have seen them. I have found a comedic voice, and AIB was truly the best place for me to be, to realize my potential as a writer and as a comic. And I'm very grateful to Tanmay and everybody else for, you know, giving me that chance.
So, Supriya, I would say that my favorite sketch that you co-wrote is the one called A Woman's Besties, which we'll be sure to link in our description here. But this was also the first sketch that you wrote with a team, and it got a lot of popularity, right?
It was, yeah. I mean, this was the first big sketch that I wrote with my team members, yeah. So it was one of the most amazing experiences, honestly, to write A Woman's Besties. It was A Woman's Bestie, sorry.
Yeah, and so for any of our listeners who haven't watched it, the sketch is all about a young woman who has a pregnancy scare, and she's taking a pregnancy test with her best friends or her besties, who are her vagina called Vajenti, her clitoris called Klitika, and her boobs called Geeta and Bubita.
I can't look at Dungal in the same way anymore after that, by the way.
I've never seen anything like it. It was so hilarious, and I know that a lot of women out there who watched it really loved it.
Yeah, that was the best part, you know, because this sketch was written by all of us were women, and the writers of this sketch, we were all not very familiar. We were all new at that point to each other when we started jamming about this sketch and this idea and where do we take it, and through just because how did this sketch really happen? It happened because of our shared experiences, which somehow have the same, you know, a concept and an ending, is that we've all had pregnancy scares that we've all felt really scared about, is one. And second is that nobody, I mean, who out here is really talking about a woman's relationship with her body? Like all these things really came into play, and then just through talking, we spent almost entire days, you know, our research was essentially through ourselves only. We would just talk and talk and talk, and from there we get so many observations, and then we realize, hey, this has happened to me too, and you know what, that's really funny when somebody gets that scared, etc., etc., etc. And now, if something so relatable is happening to a group of four women, and then it was put out into the world, and hundreds of women wrote to us and said that it was amazing, it was so funny, nobody has ever spoken about stuff like this, and we've dealt with you know, pregnancy scare in such a funny, hilarious way. Nobody ever talks about it. So, and honestly, you know, we were all very scared of backlash that we would receive from this video, because where have you seen a clitoris personified on mainstream or anything? Nowhere.
And speaking of that, actually, I was very intrigued to find out that the main feedback from the men who watched the sketch was, who is Klitika? You know, they literally had no idea. They did not get the clitoris reference.
But are you surprised? I mean, men don't know even in real life what.
Actually, I showed this video to my husband and I told him, you know, about the sad fact that a lot of men didn't know what a clitoris was. He asked me if they got the bit about Vajenti getting kissed by her boyfriend.
No, men didn't understand anything. Men, and I think that was great. It was a great conversation starter also for men, because they're like, hey. So for women, this is a funny, relatable video. And for men, it was almost sex ed, because these are things. Yeah, because these are things they don't teach us in school in India. We don't get.
And then, aren't they supposed to be more sexual and horny than women? And aren't they like consuming more porn than women, supposedly?
Yeah.
And they don't even know what a clitoris is.
Yeah, you know? Because it's never important, right? Because at the end of the day, sex is all about the men, and women shouldn't get anything out of it, because that's the
basic. Yeah, what's her pleasure got to do with
anything? Yeah, exactly. So, but it was great. It was the most, you know, self-fulfilling, like, yes, I did something great. That sketch is that for me. It's the best, honestly, it's one of the best things I've ever written, and I'm very, very proud of it.
Yeah, as you should be, Supriya. You're from the generation of women in India who started to openly address women's sexuality. And it's a very interesting time for women worldwide, as well as in India. So how do you feel, and what's it like for you as a comedian to be at the forefront of this open movement in the media especially?
Yeah, so I honestly think, I think I'm privileged that I can speak about these things on my social media, in real life, wherever. I can openly talk about these things with my parents, with my friends. So that comes to me from privilege, because my parents aren't ones who will who have ever forced me to do anything I don't want to do or ever told me to not have an opinion about something. So, and a lot of, and so many, a lot of women here don't have that privilege. So many don't. So, if I do have that voice, I have to use it. It's my duty to use it. I have to put across these important points in the way that I know best. So my strength is comedy. And if I can start a conversation about female sexuality or sex or feminism or whatever, whatever it may be, whatever are the things that are important to me, using my voice as a creator and as a comedian, I think that's how I want to leave a mark in this world, to be honest. Just somebody who did, somebody who had a voice and used it. I think I would like to do that, yeah.
And now, going back just a little bit, you know, we briefly touched upon how you got into comedy writing earlier. But before all that, you say that you started off by using comedy as a defense mechanism, you know, because you were bullied in school. So do you want to tell us about that time of your life?
Oh, so from 5th grade all the way to the 10th, there was this one kid in my class. And I don't know why, for whatever reason, he just took it upon himself to make my life miserable. So it was just relentless. Every single day, he would walk into class and say something bad, say something mean. And then his group of his cronies would join him and they would all laugh. There was really no regard to how I was feeling to that. And at that point, the fact that they thought that I was not good enough, and they kept hammering that in every day, that I was ugly, that I was fat, and for them, fat is, you know, bad. So ugly, fat, hammering that every single day into me, I sort of believed it. To a point where I just didn't know how to retaliate against that. And I tried. I'm not a very confrontational person anyway. So the most I could do was tell him, ha, same to you, back to you. That's the max I could insult this kid. But, here's a very funny thing that used to happen in my class. In my class, there were three fat kids and I was one of them. There was another girl and another guy. So he was also fat. There were three of us, fat kids. And then this my bully would make fun of me whenever. And that fat boy is laughing at me when he's making fun. And I'm like, I'm like, you're supposed to be on my side. You're not supposed to laugh with him. You're supposed to be like, hey, stop this. But it was never like that. So it just endlessly went on every single day. It took a huge beating to my self-esteem, my self-confidence. I had none of it. But what saved me, honestly, at that point was just to have like a little bit of sense of humor and to be like, you know what, this will get over one day. This is getting over one day. I would just exclude myself from everything, concentrate on just making my life easier by just picturing the scenarios and as like, this is just the trailer of your movie, so don't worry, this will get over someday. And that's just how I got through it, basically.
Picture abhi baki hai.
Exactly.
Basically. So you mentioned that were all of your bullies growing up boys, or did any girls try to bully?
They were all boys. Once or twice, yeah, there were some girls also, but mostly it was just boys. The girls weren't,
you know. My bullies were also all boys. And it's really funny to me how girls are always portrayed as mean and bitchy and gossipy. But your personal experience and my personal experience just tells a different story, right?
Definitely. I mean, you see, women, there are like a million stereotypes that exist for women. And I'm with certainty telling you that these are stereotypes that are created by men to bring women down at every instance. And this is one of them, that women are gossipy, women are bitchy. Men are the most gossipy people in the world, let's just admit it. Seriously,
I have seen with my own eyes how these groups of boys in my former school just stood together in a tight little circle and they would just be gossiping about this girl who wasn't dressed appropriately or she was kissing her boyfriend or whatever. And then there are some, you know, uncles, like male family members who just love gossiping more than any woman.
All the WhatsApp family groups are made by men and they are all used to gossip. Men are so gossipy. Every tasty gossip information I have ever received has come from a man. So let's just accept this. Men are very, very, very gossipy. It's not just women. Women are also, everyone's gossipy. Everyone likes gossip. Who doesn't like gossip?
So I actually haven't had this experience, Supriya. Maybe it's just a bit different here in Europe. I don't know. I was actually bullied by girls mainly. And especially when my mom would put Dabur Amla oil on my hair. And I'd have to go to school with that. And girls were like, why is your hair so shiny? And I'll be like, yeah, my mom put oil. And no white girl knows what oil is.
Meena, that's literally a scene from Kuch Kuch. Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham. So tacky.
So I haven't had this experience specifically with boys, so I can't join in the conversation there. But that's a very interesting side for me to hear, actually. But Supriya, there was one day there was a boy who followed you around school for a whole day. Can you tell us about that incident?
It was the same kid. It was the same guy. So
it was the same kid.
Yeah. So he that day, and he's saying this, he's announcing this to everybody in class, including to me. And he's saying, you know, today I'm going to shadow Supriya. So, and then what he did was, he just mimicked every movement of mine, but like in completely exaggerated way. And I was like, okay, I took it. I was like, okay, whatever. This isn't, I can't, how do I retaliate? I don't know how to. And then we had library class, and then we were all walking to library, and then he's walking right behind me and walking like he weighs 700 kgs or something, and he's walking like that. Everybody's laughing the entire day. And we reached the library, and that's when I lose it, because I was like, wow, how much more do I endure of this? And so I told my teacher that, and I started crying, because I was like, now this is it. This is my natural response coming in. And I started crying, and then I tell my teacher, ma'am, this boy is making fun of me. And this is the teacher. And by the way, at that this is the 90s. So in the 90s, corporal punishment was allowed in Indian schools. So the teacher goes...
I used to get slapped left, right and center, but yeah. It's continued.
Yeah, so the teacher goes and she gives him a huge slap across the face. And I'm like, oh, teacher, you're the best.
That's your moment of victory.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I couldn't hit him. My teachers hit him. I feel great. and after that, I think that slap was a slap heard around the world. You guys must have also noticed it, like for a second, in some 99 or something.
Yeah, I felt the ground under me shake for some time. That was probably the slap. Yeah.
There were some vibrations happening.
Definitely
throughout the world that day.
I thought it was at some point when I got slapped, but whatever. you can steal my thunder.
It happened. Maybe we felt that here as well in India. You know, all these earthquakes and all that happen. There's those little tremors you feel.
Earthquakes don't exist. They're just thuppards.
Just
thuppards. Mothers.
It's just thuppards. Yeah, that's it.
But Supriya, so I mean, obviously that moment when the teacher slapped this boy, that was your moment of glory and your moment of victory. But if there is any chance that you meet him face to face someday, and a part of me wishes that you do, what would you say to him? And have you thought about what would you say? Would you approach him in a more forgiving manner, or would you be more aggressive towards him? I mean, what has your life taught you in the last few years?
So there is a fantasy version of what I would like. And this is a fantasy version that has happened, that I've thought about since I was a kid. This is my...
I love that. I already know what you're going to say. I just want to say that I love it.
This is my fantasy version of how I would... what I would want, okay? So this is the story. And this is something I thought about as a kid. Is that I am in my... I'm this age. I'm where I am right now. And I'm in my mansion. And I'm just chilling in my mansion. And the doorbell rings, and I go to open it, And there stands my bully, and he has my pizza, and he's delivering my pizza to me. And I take my pizza, and he's like, oh my God, Supriya? And I'm like, hey. So he's like, wow, what happened? Wow. And then I'm like, I know, that's what happens. And then I take the pizza and I give him, now in my fantasy, I'm in America. I'm an American millionaire. So I give him like $200 and it's like, and I'm like, keep the change. And I close the door on his face.
Amazing.
Well, Supriya, I mean, that just shows that you've just watched way too much Bollywood as a child.
Too much.
And obviously you have this fantasy.
But in reality, okay. So, and now I'll tell you three. This is the first fantasy. The second is something I want to happen. And the third is something that has happened. Now, the something that I want to happen is, if I ever see him in real life, I want to just ask him one thing, which is why. That's it. I just want to know why from him. And that is it. I don't think, honestly, I have forgiven him, because honestly, he ruined a large part of my life. Like, even beyond school to college, because of all the beating that my conscience, my soul took because of him. I have difficulty in forgiving him. But another third thing that had happened is that he added me on Facebook a few years back. And I was like, there's no way I'm adding this guy to my Facebook. So I wrote him a really long message which said all of these things that I just told you guys. And he replied, but we were just children. But I was just a child. That's his response. And my response to him was, but I was also a child. I was not an adult that you were making fun of. And I would be like, ha, ye to bachcha, let him go. I was also a child. So we are the same age. So at the point where you made fun of me or you ruined my life, essentially, is my growing up years. And this is what you did. But, you know, I mean, of course, if I could change things, obviously, I go back to the past and change things, tell myself it'll be all right. I would. But if all of our life experiences hadn't happened, we wouldn't turn out to be who we are today. And I'm so happy to be where I'm today, because today I use my platform to also talk about bullying and how everybody is good enough, how everybody is beautiful and perfect. And a lot of people need to hear that, you know, from somebody who has gone through all of this. So, yeah.
Well, this brings us to the present day bullying that you've also faced, Supriya. By the way, I'm sorry. It just sounds like your life has just been full of bullying. I'm sure it hasn't, we'll get to the good news soon.
Yeah.
But it brings us to the present day bullying that you have faced online, Supriya. And I'm sure that it's something that doesn't just happen to you. It happens to a lot of your other female comedians and colleagues. But there were some fat shaming memes you were tagged in a while ago. And you had a great response to it, but some of the responses to your statement, you know, they were targeted at your health and the implications of being overweight in today's world and today's generation. So how did you react to that now, considering that, yes, you had your experience as a child, and I would assume that you've learned something, you've taken something from that. So when this happened to you now, at this moment in your life, what was your reaction?
Honestly, not surprised. Because it happens, you know, it happens to everybody. Everybody in some state gets bullied. Now, I am somebody who has, who is at a point in her life where I am being followed by a lot of people, who have a lot of varied opinions about everything. So, and also that I am a comic, I am a comedian. So a lot of people tell me shit, but... And with their idea is that, oh, I'm not going to get offended because I'm a comic. That's such a stupid idea. That's so stupid, because if you want to make fun of me with the idea that I'm a comic, you should come to an open mic, stand on the stage, and then in front of an audience make fun of me, because that's the place as a comic I will respond to you. Online, if you're telling me something about what I look like and everything, we are not comrades, we are not colleagues, we are not riffing off of each other. You're just making fun of me, you're just telling me horrible things. And because of the way I look, obviously, first, every bad comment that I receive is always first thought. You know, you're fat, you look like an elephant, you look like this, blah, 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 blah. So I've just have learned to filter all of this out. And I feed myself positive things because another person's negative opinion about me is just not true. The only opinion that matters to me is my own. And to me, I am amazing. Like, I can't get enough of myself. Like, I love myself so much. It's a disease.
We can't get enough of you, Supriya. So.
Yeah, so obviously, like, recently on Twitter, this trolling escalated to an insane level where these people started taking screenshots of my Instagram stories and started making fun of those on Twitter. And that really shook me. I was like, wow, like, this backup here. And then I had to make my accounts private and all. That was the one recent one which really, like, usually it doesn't matter to me, but this time it was just on a different level. And I at that point I decided, you know, I'm gonna stop tweeting. I'm never gonna come back to Twitter. And so many people reached out to me, even people from Twitter HQ reached out to me, and they were like, you know, you can't quit Twitter because you have a voice that is important to exist on our platform. And but yeah, it's so, but I don't know if the trolling will never end. It will always be around in some capacity, and this is no matter what I look like. Now suddenly if I lose a lot of weight and I somehow look like, I don't know, some soup, like Giselle Bundchen or something, tomorrow they won't call me fat elephant anymore. They're going to call me sexual things. They're going to call me horrible thing. And this is stuff that happens. Like, if you think any woman can escape trolling, it's wrong. Like, look at Sunny Leone's, what comments she gets. Look at any woman. Everybody gets every woman gets terrible comment no matter what they look like. So it's not escapable at all.
Yeah, I was listening to a TED talk by a Malayali actress recently, and she was saying, if you want to see how we as actresses should live our lives, there's an entire advice forum in our comment section where the men will even tell us what all sexual positions they want to rape us in.
Yeah, it's all so anything, like, men just are so entitled to a woman's body and entitled to say anything they want about a woman, that they just don't hold back. So now for me, because of my body shape, and obviously being fat is not a desirable thing, for me, the way that they can put me down is by calling me mean things about what I look like, my weight. If I looked like if I was an actress on TV or whatever film, there are other things that they will tell me about the way I look and the way and what all they want to do to me. It's just, there's no escape. As long as men have access to the internet, it's going to happen. It's going to keep happening.
Supriya, I don't know if you've managed to find a pattern here, but do you feel that your 90% or most of your trolls are actually male?
All of them are men.
Do you get all of them?
Yeah, even the ones with women as their display picture, they're not women. They're catfish accounts and they're all men.
Oh my God. Wow.
Women really, honestly, I don't think women really have a problem with me existing on the internet. I honestly don't, because that's the kind of feedback I have received so far, that women, most of my followers on Instagram are women, and they just genuinely feel like, yeah, you know, somebody is talking about body positivity, somebody is talking about self-love, and they like that. Women want that. Women want other women to talk about these things because they feel so unable to talk about it themselves. So,
So, Supriya, I'm not even 5 feet tall, and I used to get short shamed for up until 3 years ago, which is when I got married. You know, when you get married to a tall guy who apparently doesn't see any flaw in you and actually, you know, agreed to marry you, poor thing, people just stop stop making fun of your height. But when my insecurities were at their highest, I think that was when I was going through puberty and whatnot, my mom always told me that if people fixate on a physical aspect of you that they think is not good enough, instead of ever commenting on the progress that you've made in other areas of your life, you know, you should always remind yourself that they've found it impossible to find faults with you in things that actually matter. Exactly. You know, that's the reason why they're making fun of you for things that really don't matter. And this is the first thing that comes to mind when I hear you talk about body positivity. And the thing is that this is not the first time that you and I are noticing this trend of people trying to attack and bring women down. You know, as you put it, they see that these women are doing things. They're speaking their minds. They're being funny on stage. They're being outspoken and they're making people think. So the main attacks and reactions to these women is mostly manifested in physical threats, either body shaming or rape threats or death threats. So why do you think, just taking your personal case into account, why do you think so many people feel threatened by women like you?
Because I have a voice which has been suppressed for years, and I'm not talking about me as an individual. I'm talking about my voice as a woman who is funny, has been suppressed for years and years and years by men because they are threatened by it. Like they for as long as humanity has existed, they have managed to suppress women in whatever field that exists. But now is the year of the woman. I feel now is the time for women, because now we have platforms, we have access, and at the same time, men who have already had these platforms and this access, now we are trying to permeate into it, and that's threatening men. They're like, oh, but if a comedian is... No, I'm not saying that I have had any bad experiences with any male comics. They have all been very accommodating to me. I'm talking about these so-called commentators on Twitter who feel like they have an authority of knowing what a woman comic, you know, speaks about and shit. They're like, oh, now that the woman's voice is permeating into the comedy scene, that's not funny because it's not relatable to me. Oh, she's talking about boobs, bra and period. Oh, that's not funny. I want to hear about, I don't know, I don't want to hear about masturbation jokes. I don't want to hear about this. So that's unrelatable to a man. But to a woman who's listening to another woman speak, that's such a breath of fresh air to her. It's like, oh, finally someone's not talking about masturbation. Finally someone's talking about how much it sucks to have a period, how bras are so uncomfortable, all of these things. So, yeah, we have to threaten men more with our voices. We have to scream as loud as we can. And that's the only way we can reach a place where we are all equal with each other. There is no up and there is no down.
Actually, this reminds me, there was a couple of months ago, I read an article and it was written by a male, and he wrote that whenever Amy Schumer jokes, when she goes on stage, she always talks about her pussy. And I was like, why is that a bad thing?
Yeah.
You know, like this is something that we don't usually hear about. So for a woman to go out and be so comfortable in talking about her body and our body parts, like what's wrong with that?
Yeah, you know? What's wrong with that?
And you make a good point that people are just not used to hearing this, and they're not comfortable to hearing about women's ideas on their body and other women's bodies. And it's not always, jokes don't have to be about masturbating or jerking off. So you make a good point over there. But you also make it very clear to your followers that it's really important to love your body and feel comfortable in your own skin. And we know you're the skinny goddess of Instagram.
Yes. So,
you've personally been through your own journey of body confidence, Supriya. But before we jump into any of that, so I'm a medical student myself, and I recently studied obstetrics and gynecology. So you speak a lot about PCOS, this polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I think it's really important that people are aware of this, because it's becoming a disease or a syndrome that many people are finding are more aware of, because more people have access to healthcare and more people have access to doctors. So they're aware of this condition. So not many people know about this. So can you explain what PCOS is and when were you first diagnosed with it?
Okay, sure. So PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome, is this condition in which the amount of testosterone increases in a woman's body. So, and then she shows signs like there's excess facial hair, you get problems with your period, they're either irregular or too much is happening, you might lose your hair, stuff like that. So essentially you're becoming a man, your body is rejecting your womanhood. And like, you know, let's become a man now, like enough, let's not be a woman anymore. But but I was diagnosed with this, I think I was in the 8th grade, 7th or 8th grade, I think, is when I got diagnosed with PCOS. And then I was put on medication from that point, which is when I used to take medicines, and which is when my parents were like, she's too young to start medicines now. And I stopped taking them, after which the signs of PCOS just kept on increasing, and you know, stuff like that happened. And then I went, this is something even my sister has, so both of us have PCOS. And then we went to the doctors again, and then they put us on those stupid pills, after which everything feels so great after you start taking those pills. Like your skin looks amazing, flawless, your hair is beautiful, you feel so feminine, you feel like, oh, like you're surrounded by flowers and bees all the time. And then we went to a checkup again to the same doctor, and both of us were just getting frustrated of just continuously every day taking these pills. And we asked him, when do we stop taking these pills? And he tells us, when you're married. And I'm like, what? What? Is that my option? Like, marriage is how I'm going to stop taking this pill? I'm not going to take these pills anymore. And then the two of us stopped taking those pills. And then all that femininity went out the window. It was like, we, you know, our faces puffed up. Our hair was just ruined. Everything went back. And I was like, wow, this is bad. But
this is so interesting, because he said when you're married, because basically if for people who might not be aware, these pills that you were having were basically birth control pills.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. So when you're married, you should stop taking it because your birth control is not in your hands.
Yeah.
You want to have children, obviously.
Exactly.
Like.
So it's like, what if I want to adopt then? Do I still take these? Do I still have to keep taking these pills because I don't want to? So,
Supriya, I would love to have you as a patient. It would be so funny.
Yeah, but let's hope I never have to be a patient. Let's hope I...
No, let's hope not, yeah. But Supriya, we spoke to a plus-size model a couple of months back in season 4. Her name is Sukhminder Kaur, and she's from the UK. And we discussed at length that women, all men, shouldn't glorify being a certain size or weight, because, well, it's not healthy when you're in either extreme. I think that's something that's pretty obvious. But there are certain celebrities who make it seem that it's okay to binge eat, to eat McDonald's every day. And I personally see this when I watch Amy Schumer or Mindy Kaling, you know, they say like, yeah, I eat McDonald's every day, I eat donuts, and like, and they make it seem as if that's okay, and it's not. So a healthy lifestyle is also extremely important, but following a healthy lifestyle doesn't mean that you will be a size zero. Now, Supriya, I know I'm not saying that everyone who's, the whole point is that everybody who's overweight, or every woman you see who may be a size bigger, doesn't necessarily mean that she just eats junk every day. There are people who have genetic conditions, or people who have syndromes and diseases, and that plays a big role in how you look. And one thing that I've learned as a medical student is that a lot of women, especially who seem overweight, are not so by choice.
Yeah.
Or by laziness. It's just they have underlying conditions that people don't know about, because, well, it's not like you've written it right across your forehead, like, by the way, I have PCOS. Or by the way, you know, and people don't know these things. So people really need to have a conversation about these conditions.
Definitely, which is why I do stand-up comedy. And I have written a whole set about it. I have written a set about having PCOS and what it means to me. And because a way to normalize something that is a little taboo to talk about is through comedy. So I do that. Like, I make fun of this condition that I have and what I go through with it. And whenever I take this stage, and I make it a little interactive. I'm like, I have PCOS. Does anybody else here have PCOS? And there are 4 or 5 women raising their hands. They're like, yeah, we have it too. Like, in the audience. Because And then after the set is done, I get so many messages on my Instagram and my Facebook that tell me that, you know, I feel so much more confident in talking about my condition because you talked about it. And it's like it's a condition that is so common. Like, I think what is the ratio? I think what every 2 in 5 women have it, something like that. So if that is the case, then you have to normalize it. You have to be like, yes, I have PCOS. What can you do about it? And that's why I love performing this bit, because every time I do it, there are women in the audience who are like, yes, nobody speaks about PCOS, and I'm happy to hear about it too. So yeah, that always feels good to me.
In speaking of your stand-up comedy, you know, you're, like we mentioned earlier, you belong to this generation of Indian women who are doing this for the first time, because women from communities like ours, they're generally hesitant to go on stage unless it's for classical dance or something, because they haven't seen many others do this before. And moreover, you know, growing up, at least in my community, among the girls surrounding me, I've noticed how we're not really encouraged to make jokes. We're not allowed to be loud. We don't have to be the life of the party. We're usually discouraged from doing all of those things. So although you started out by using your comedy as a defense mechanism when you were a child, what is it like now, first entering this world of stand-up comedy, which is so new to Indian women?
Yeah, I didn't want to do it. When I joined AIB, there were a few writers there who did stand-up comedy after the workday was over. And many, many times they would tell me, Supriya, why don't you come? Come with us, do a set. And I was like, there's no way I can do stand-up comedy. I'm not funny enough. There's no chance, blah, blah, blah. I never imagined that I would be doing it. But it was, there's this comic here, his name is Rohan Desai. And in AIB, they were doing this thing called as trial ball, which is basically like the open micers and like established comics. They were all going to come together, do a show for an audience of like 300 odd people. So and then that's when he told me, Supriya, I'm putting your name. He was curating this. So he's like, I'm putting your name in the lineup, and you have to do it. I'm like, there's no way. I'm not funny. All those excuses I started saying. I'm not funny, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, I'm not listening to any of that. I'm putting your name in. And then he did. Now, because he did that, I was forced to write a set for my stand. And I was so nervous about it. I was like, no, this is not funny. This isn't funny. I was just, and then I read it out to him, and then he was like, this is actually funny. I'm very happy that you should do it. And then the day came, and I was so nervous. I was literally shitting bricks. Okay. I was like, oh my God. I was literally somehow my shits were bricks. TMI. Like this.
TMI, Supriya.
Hey, I thought this was an honest and open conversation. So I'm being...
Sorry, yes, you're right. I mean, if we talk about Vaijayanti and Klitika, we can always talk about Anu S as well.
Yes.
We can talk about the more unattractive side of female body parts.
Exactly. Like, listen, men need to know this, that women should break. It happens. Guys, it happens.
So, Supriya, except when you're writing stand-up comedy scripts, you know, you're mostly writing these sketches with other people, like with a team, right?
Yeah, I am. I don't work with AIB anymore. I think you knew that. So when I was with AIB, yeah, that's how it went. We used to write.
So, but while you were working in a team like that, have you ever noticed any stark contrast between writing with men and writing with women? Because the Women's Besties sketch was written by all women, but you've written sketches with men as well. Is there a difference working with just men and just women?
It's an interesting question. Basically, obviously, when you're writing in a mixed group, your insights and observations are all going to be different. Let's say the topic is food. A woman's perspective to and a man's perspective to it is going to be completely different. So it is interesting sometimes for men to hear the women's side of the story. Like, it's sometimes it's almost like a revelation when you're talking about stuff with each other. Like, oh, really, that happens? I'm like, yeah, that happens. And to hear it from them also, like their perspectives to something, is interesting. But what matters is if the observations come through harmoniously to, and then, I mean, jokes to anybody can say, like, doesn't matter. And to make like a...
And since we're, you know, talking feminism here, I just want... I was thinking about how you're there at the forefront of this. And I was thinking, is there more pressure on women writers and comedians to deliver better content, especially since there aren't many of you out there?
So much. So much pressure. Mm-hmm. Because when a man is on the stage and he tanks, okay, his feedback is, oh, this guy is not funny. If a woman tanks on stage, the feedback is, oh, women are not funny only. Because that is the stereotype that you have come to see the show with. That's like, you have, first only you know women are not funny. And then you watch the performance of a woman who may not have done so well. So, and because she hasn't, you're like, huh, the stereotype is right. Women are not funny. It's not that individual who isn't funny. Just the whole sex is not funny. Women are not funny. So it's a lot of pressure, to be honest.
I remember we interviewed Anjali Menon, who's a Malayalam film director. And she mentioned, so we asked her a similar question because you're one of the first female film, you know, filmmakers in Kerala. What is it like? And she said, the thing is, if you go ahead and make a great film, then it's like, sure, you made a film. But if you fail at doing it, then it's immediately all women are bad filmmakers.
Exactly. It's like every time a woman goes on the stage to perform, she is not only performing for herself, she's performing for the entire gender. It's like, if I fail today, I failed my gender. Like, that's the amount of pressure a woman has on her every time she takes the stage to, or even to write something for a comedy sketch.
Well, I think this mentality is displayed in many other angles of our lives as well. Like, you know, women are bad at driving. Women can't drive. Women can't play sports. Women can't do comedy. And I think that it stems from just from what we hear as a child. And I think that's why it's so important that we are very mindful of what we say in front of young children, especially because we don't want these things on the tips of their tongues as they grow up, because then it will just become again part of the culture like it is now.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to be very mindful. Yeah.
Oh, and women are worse at maths than men.
Well, I am very bad at math. So there is
you're letting down all women's career. Oh, how can you do that?
Women, I'm so sorry, but I am the worst at math. I don't even know how to spell math. That's how bad I am at math.
Oh my god. Well, Supriya, we've asked this question to every comedian on our show.
Yeah.
And this is something that I have an opinion about, but I wanted to ask you, what do you think of the generic comedy that we see in Indian television? You know, like Laughter Challenge and Bharti Singh and Comedy Nights with Kapil. What's your opinion on this, side of TV?
So when I was younger and I didn't have, obviously, we don't have that much access to international comics and what is really comedy? You don't have access to all of that. And genuinely, I used to really like watching these shows. Great Indian Laughter Challenge, I think it was called. And it used to be really funny. I was younger then, obviously. I used to love their acts. I used to love Raju Srivastava. I used to love Sunil Pal. I used to hear the jokes. I used to laugh. I used to imitate them. Like, that's how much of an impact they had as I was growing up. But as then again, when I grew up and then I got access to actual comedy, like what comedy means. Comedy is just not about fart jokes and physical humor and sound effects. That if you put a little bit of thought into what you're saying, you can actually touch somebody with just with comedy. And when I realized that, when I then with that filter, when I started watching these things and I realized, wow, this is not funny at all. This is regressive. This is sexist. This is giving ideas to a new generation, which are like these are jokes that men have been saying from the 70s. And the fact that people are still laughing at them is just sad.
Yeah.
It's just very, very sad.
Because we spoke to Bollywood Gandhu from SNG Comedy, you make Karan Dalwar, and he said that he thinks it's noise. He doesn't even, he refuses to accept that it's any, is close to even being comedy. And yeah, another comedian we spoke to also said that he empathizes with them because he believes they also need to make money. But I think now, Supriya, that we live in a time, in an era where this new wave of comedy is needed, because as you mentioned before, it's to raise awareness for certain things. And also I think now, like, because we have such poor quality news and we just don't have the right stream of media coming in, I think that we need to get our information from comedians now. And I think it's the best way for people to become educated and to be more aware of the world.
But you're right. But you know, it also has like, a very severe caveat also. I don't know if you've been following the what's been happening to the Indian comic Kunal Kamra, but if you do speak your mind too much, and if you do have an opinion about something too much, then the people who have a problem with your opinions are really going to try everything they can to shut you down. And that's what happened. I think he deleted his Twitter account after all of this, and it's pretty sad. So while yes, I personally do believe that comedy and comics now can be the perfect reflection of life in society, people will still not allow you to do that, because if you are against a popular opinion, then well, you have to suffer the consequences. And that's the saddest thing you can ever think about comedy. That's just terrible.
Do you have to spend a lot of time thinking about the, like, if you go up and do a stand up and you go out, do you have to think a lot about censorship and being careful about what you say? Is that a big part of your process?
Well, not when I'm doing comedy on stage, no. But I know that a lot of my material I cannot put online, because as I mentioned before, consequences. So, and I would like to be alive. So there are some things that I cannot put up. So, yeah.
So can we discuss this material? And one of the subjects that really stood out to me, something that you make fun of in your skits, fuckboys.
Oh,
so this was bleeped out in the Cyrus Barucha podcast, but we're not going to bleep it out. Please tell our listeners who all fall under this category of fuckboys and why they're so easy to make fun of.
They're so stupid. Because, okay, here, fuckboys are basically men who will make a woman fall for them and then suddenly just disappear, because whatever he needed out of this, whatever relationship was, has been fulfilled, and now he can make a swift exit from there. And I have had many fuckboy experiences, and now as I'm wiser, I see the pattern. You see right through their facade and what they're trying to play. And you know what, you're like, you know what, I'm too old for this shit. Please be a fuckboy to somebody else, and hopefully even not to another person. But yeah, but
you have a pattern of recognizing them as well.
Yeah, it's just they message you when they're drunk. That's it. This just happened to me like what, day before yesterday. It was so funny. This ex fuckboy is messaging me out of the blue, like, hey, what's up? I'm like, oh, what's up? He's like, I'm drunk, so I'm messaging you. And I'm okay, cool. And I'm like, you know, I really want to talk to this guy now. Okay, let's see. And then he's like, you know, I really miss talking to you. And I'm like, if you miss talking to me, you would have messaged me. No, but you've never messaged me. You're thinking of right now to message me because you're drunk, and there are some hormones inside of you that are working in overdrive, and you need somebody to talk to at this point. But yeah, they're so easy to read now. They're like, and I'm like, guys, it's 2018. Please grow up. Stop playing these stupid fucking games with women. Just have a healthy, normal relationship. Just talk. If you don't like a person, say it to them. I don't like you. I want to move on from this. Or if you like a person, just say, hey, I like you. Let's just do this. I'm not going to go around with 500 other women. So Yeah, as you can tell, I am very frustrated with fuckboys, but...
But you also, you know, make fun of the fact that they have a particular kind of hairstyle, the way they dress, their raised eyebrows.
Yes.
But I wanted to ask you, you know, as a feminist who literally co-wrote a whole song about objectifying kalayas,
yeah.
Do you think that maybe some men who just simply choose to dress in that particular way also get objectified when you make fun of them?
Sure. am I supposed to feel bad about that? Because okay, fine, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have generalized men who look like that. But some stereotypes are generally true, so I don't know. I could be wrong.
You know. Speaking of objectifying kalayas and the Bollywood diva song, you know, you worked with Kangana Ranaut, who's, you know, a feminist icon for Desi girls like us, and we love her. But specifically, since you worked with her before, would you ever make fun of Hrithik Roshan in any of your scripts? Now, I'm asking you because is there ever a risk of your comedy in such a case turning too personal or political?
No, honestly, when we did write this Bollywood diva song, it wasn't written for Kangana. It was just written. And observations that were used in it are so general. It happens with everybody. Now, and even any woman who's a working woman, she goes through all of these, this stereotyping and objectification at their workplaces also. That was the base idea of this song. So, when we happened to approach Kangana for it, it just all worked out in the end. Yeah, it was just like, she specifically had so many of these experiences of her own that were matching the things that we had written in the song. So specifically, I would find no reason to make fun of any person unless they have done something really, really, really awful, you know.
Well, Hrithik Roshan, you can make fun of him. He's a little too pretty, so you can totally make fun of him.
Then I have way too many people to make fun of.
Supriya, but is there a line that you draw when you write comedy, especially when, you know, when you have to, when you involve other people?
Yeah, definitely. So there's this terminology here. It's called punching down. So basically, punching down in comedy is if you are making fun of somebody who is not in the same place of privilege as you are. So I very consciously try and avoid such topics to write about, because I don't have a perspective on it as much as somebody from that place might have. So I don't. I can only joke about things that are true to me and true to who I am and true to my experiences, and always punch up. So punch up is obviously the opposite, making fun of somebody who's at a better place, at more privileged than you are. And that is how I think everybody should be doing comedy, to be honest.
So, Supriya, I remember I joined one of your live Instagrams. Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but I mentioned that you and your sister should start your own TV show. Something similar to Keenan and Kel.
Oh my God, we love Keenan and Kel.
Oh my God, who doesn't? If you don't like Keenan and Kel, then I don't know what world you're living in. But... And I think Keenan and Kel was great because it's one of those shows you can actually watch with your sibling.
Yeah.
Because I believe every sibling is a Keenan and every sibling is a Kel. Absolutely. So it really works out. Yeah. But how much of a role does your sister play in your life as a comedian?
She is an extension of me, I think. Because I sometimes feel... Obviously, whenever I... think of an observation or something funny to write, I always ask her about her opinion on it. What does she think, and if she has anything to write? And because I think we have we're siblings, we've gone through similar life experiences. We've shared a room ever since we were kids, ever since I can remember. So we our energies are similar, and also but her style is very different to mine. I'm a little extra expressive and she's a little held back. But yeah.
That's something I wanted to get to because she always comes across as really serious. And
yeah.
I think she could be like Ankita's best friend because that's literally what Ankita looks like when I talk to her. But does she really just have, does she put on a poker face or is she really like
she's
that?
She's really like that, okay? She's not.
What?
Yeah, she's not serious, but she is very dry. Her humor is extremely sarcastic. And
oh my god, that bit 2 days ago when she said, "Ma, ye jitna time apne phone se baat karte hai, humse bhi baat karte hai, to kitna acha hota." I just burst out laughing because Meenal told me in advance that you need to go and watch Supriya's Instagram story, and her sister says this. So the joke was ruined already. And then I go in and I see your sister's expression when she says it.
Yeah, she's like that. She is, you know, she is my reality check, honestly. If I'm ever feeling like, oh, I'm the best, and she's the one who's going to remind me, you still have a ways to go, you know. So she's like that. But she's not serious. She's very fun. But the only thing is that the way she expresses it is through very, very dry humor and always making fun of me, which I'm okay with because...
You know, Supriya, if we had the capacity to do so, I would have loved to have both of you like talking to us. I think you guys would have riffed off so well. It would have been so much fun.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your Instagram stories and maybe stalking you from time to time, I remember in one of your stories, you mentioned that one of your shows was cancelled. And I think the same thing happened this weekend as well.
Yeah.
And is it because... not enough tickets were sold?
Yeah, so actually this happened this time because it was a long weekend, so a lot of people went out of town. Usually it doesn't happen, but yeah, most people weren't in town. So I had a show on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, so it was from Friday everybody was off, so that show got cancelled. And Saturday show, which I was very upset about because I looked so good.
I know,
on Saturday.
You looked fabulous.
I looked
yeah,
so
this was the good. Same day, wasn't it? This
yeah.
was the same day when your sister said, please talk to us.
Yeah, I felt so bad because I never make any effort to look good for a stand-up comedy show. I just go in whatever clothes I am wearing. I don't bother. But on Saturday...
And yet she gave you 30 out of 100, Supriya.
Yeah, she's... That is how much my sister keeps me grounded, because they could both have said, oh, you look 100 out of 100, and I'd be like, eh, but she's like, you can do better, you know, you're 30 right now.
But Supriya, does this happen to young comics who are trying to find their mark? Because I would assume that you have a venue, and obviously the venue needs to make money as well. So is this something that young comics struggle with?
With the shows getting cancelled?
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't happen usually, you know. Tickets do get sold. Very rarely a show is cancelled because of, lack of tickets. What really helps, obviously, is if you have, like, a really big headliner coming to your show, like an established comic, because then obviously tickets will get sold. But, usually there is no... Like, people do come out to see comedy. It's just that sometimes... long weekends happen and nobody's in town, so
yeah. Because sometimes Ankit and I, when we prepare for an interview, usually there's a lot of preparation and scripting and stalking that goes into this, and there've been times where we've had to wait for a long time for our guests, and there've been times where we sat here for an hour just waiting and convincing ourselves that they might show up. But sometimes we've been stood up as well. But I would imagine writing comedy is a much longer process. So if a show gets cancelled, is it really the end of, like, not the end of the world, but is it just like, yeah, you know, I'll just go to another venue and do the same thing, or do you have to start from scratch again?
No, I mean, you have your material, you've written it, mm-hmm. so you can try it at any location, so it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If a show gets cancelled today, you can do it tomorrow.
And do you usually stay, so are you in Mumbai right now?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, and is that where you're doing most of your shows right now, or do you plan to keep traveling around India and...
So, yeah, I have actually traveled to, in November, I went to Delhi. No, October, November, I think. I went to Delhi and I did a week of stand-up over there. I performed in Ahmedabad. I've performed in Bangalore. And next month, again, I'm going to Delhi to perform for 3 days, and also to Pune.
So we got you at a good time then, Supriya.
Yeah.
Before you go busy.
So Supriya, while we're on the topic of some of the disappointments and difficulties that you have to face as a female comedian in India, what advice would you give to someone who wishes to follow your footsteps?
I would say just get on that stage. Don't overthink too much. And obviously a lot of women I have met who are funny, who are naturally funny. And I've told them, you know, you really should try stand-up comedy. And they are always hesitant about it. No, whatever, whatever. But I would say don't bother. If it's your first time, don't bother too much about perfecting your material. What you need to bother about right now is to just get on that stage and to just say whatever you've written. Because it can go two ways. It can go two ways. Either you will tank miserably and you get that experience out of the way so that now you can start being, you know, now you know, acha, this isn't working, now this might work, that might happen, or you might do so well that you're like, oh wow, this is something I should be doing. So either way, either things can happen, and both things are really good to happen. So I would suggest, don't be afraid. You have every, and this is specifically for women, we all feel very like, I'm not good enough for anything we do in life. Don't, just forget that thinking. You are good enough. Get on that stage, tell your story, make your voice heard, because the more we hear from women, the more things that men find alienating will become relatable. And
like, a clitoris is a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It exists.
It exists. Guys, just search for it a little harder. I don't know, but it exists.
No, please accept that.
So this has been amazing, Supriya. Thank you so much for giving us your time and letting us pick your brains today. And if any of our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they go about that?
You can follow me on Instagram. My handle is SUPAARWOMAN, SuparWoman. Same for Twitter, and yeah, or email me, suparwoman@gmail.com. That's where you can find me.
And to all our listeners, please follow Supriya on Instagram. It will change your life. It will make your days a lot better and a lot brighter.
Thank you. That's what I aim to do, yes.
Well, thank you, Supriya. We hope we'll meet again sometime soon.
I hope so too. Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you, as always, dear listeners, for tuning in. This conversation with Supriya is something that we'll always remember, because both Meenal and I agreed that it felt like we were hanging out with one of our friends. But we want to know what you thought of this episode too. So please send in your thoughts and comments to mail@desioutsiders.com. And please, please, please don't forget to leave a review on iTunes, because that's what helps more people like you to tune into our show.
And before you leave, you may already be updated with our orphanage progress in Kenya. We've been posting updates about our funds and how we are helping our 12 orphans in Kenya. If you would like to be a part of our foundation, whether it's volunteering or even just donating some money to help us build this orphanage, you can find our website in the show notes below. You can also drop us a mail if you have any questions regarding our orphanage in Kenya, or if you have any more ideas on how to help. So until next week, I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And we are the Desi Insiders. I mean, Desi Outsiders. Just put a bomb out there.